Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Get all the latest football headlines and bite-sized opinion in the brand new Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Join Mark Smith, Martin Grutten, and a conveyor belt of guests as they dissect all the biggest stories in one small, perfectly formed package. Take 5 to 10 minutes out of your day to stay up to date with everything that matters in football, whether it's a big result from the night before, a new excuse from Jurgen Klopp, a shocker of a VAR decision, or a new chapter in the ongoing Man United soap opera. We will cover it. All the latest news, every weekday lunchtime, on the Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Look for the Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Man City Show. It's Nigel Rockman back in the chair. So it's back to winning ways for the Blues in the Premier League at the weekend. How good were Brighton? That's one question for my guests to think about. With Arsenal slipping up, it means it's just now, what, 2-point gap at the top of the Premier League after 11 games. And then, of course, in the Champions League, a tricky trip to Dortmund resulted in a 0-0 draw, but it was enough for City to top Group G. To discuss that and much more, I have two guests. Welcome to Tony Newgrosh. Hi, Tony.
Good evening, Nigel.
Good to see you. And welcome also to Spencer Debson. Hi, Spencer.
Hi, Nigel.
Listen, let's just start, if I can, with Brighton, because not many teams come to the Etihad and have more possession than Manchester City. So I think we should give them huge credit, shouldn't we, Spencer? They were impressive, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, Brighton have always sort of overperformed, haven't they, routinely, to a point where I think we expect them to play well. And they did play well. I actually wasn't at the game or following it. And I sort of tuned in, you know, after sort of 30, 35 minutes, and I thought, normality has resumed. Our boy Erling has knocked a couple in. And I didn't really know the flow of the game. But I think when I watched it back later, they played well. We'll go into the details of the game, but we deserved the win. But no, they played well, Brighton, and it wasn't easy for us to see the game out, but we did a good job in the end.
Apart from their gaudy highlighter pen kit, Tony, I thought they did pretty well.
I thought they did, and I thought a lot of the commentary on the game was a bit disingenuous. A lot of it sort of suggested, well, we let them into the game for a while, but then we decided we'd be good, and it was a case of how many we'd score. No, as you say, they had 52% possession, and I'd be quite gobsmacked to learn when the last time a team came to the Etihad and had the majority of the possession, and could very easily have equalised. They had a very good chance. I think it was Trossard, wasn't it, who forced a good save out of Edison. And I thought they were magnificent. I full credit to them. It's very refreshing to see a team come and have a go. And they've tried it in the past. And in the past, sometimes it's blown up in their faces. They've given us a couple of goals. But no, I thought they were magnificent, actually. And I think they're a great credit to the Premier League.
And it's interesting because I sit in the Colin Bell stand, and Pep is often in my eye line. Just kind of, I kind of almost sometimes have to look through him. And I don't think I've seen him as agitated as that and as animated as that for a long time. And there was something tactically that Brighton did that got him wound up. So it's either, I couldn't quite work out whether it was their tactics that were winding him up, or the fact that City were not kind of playing the tactics that they talked about on the training ground all week and in the dressing room before the game. So I couldn't quite work it out. Did either of you see anything particularly tactically that they did? Why? Because 52% possession against Manchester City at home is kind of unheard of. You said the last team who did it were, oh yeah, Brighton. So there's something about this team, and there was something about it at the weekend that meant tactically, I'm still trying to work it out. Any thoughts, any ideas of why it looked that way, Tony?
Well, I think Match of the Day made the point they went man to man. So they pushed up very high and very hard, and they were pretty brave about that. And indeed, I think that's arguably why we scored the first goal, because our man Erling dropped deep and then made the run, and there was no covering defender there. So, but no,
there was a fella there, but he sort of he got out of the way a bit quick.
Well, he was moved delicately out of the way, yes. Yeah. I think you'll find. But yeah, he tried to come across. Yes, I think that was what they did. As I say, they pushed high up the pitch instead of just trying to defend for 90 minutes. As I say, I thought they were magnificent, and I would watch them every week if it wasn't watching City.
Spencer, anything to add to that tactically?
Yeah, they're good footballing side. You know, I've always liked Danny Welbeck. I always wondered why he wasn't really, I know he's at Man U originally, but, you know, he's settled into the Brighton team and important for them. But you feel he's got more seniority to him. I feel that. Trossard, near post, Ederson sort of got a hand to it. Do we feel that he could have done a bit better? I mean, these are the points we bring up about Ederson time and again, and it's so easy to criticise a keeper. It was a good shot from Trossard, but I do think he could have done a bit better.
Agreed.
I think we all agreed on that. I mean, keepers never like being beaten at their near post. It's a shame we don't have Steve Cox on tonight, who's our resident keeper, speaks for all keepers. He was a fine keeper in his day, of course. So I think he would be disappointed. But they just looked at an attacking threat. I mean, the number of times I turned to Stuart, who sits next to me on one side during the game, said, they've got four men in the box here, Brighton. You know, going forward.
Well, they move as a unit. I mean, they do what we do. They move as a unit, possession-based, and good footballers. I think it's simple as that, really. I mean, you know, if you have a good team that's cohesive and plays in that way, you will... You know, you've got to defend well enough. You know,
and we've touched on it. You talked about the fact that Haaland will talk about the goal, and clearly it was at a point where Pep was getting more and more agitated, and Ederson, don't know if you noticed, was holding onto the ball a lot longer at the back. You know, he was just sitting with it and playing it across the back. For they were waiting for something to happen, I think. And of course, then we found out what it was. They kind of leave this one defender exposed. Because they were pushing up, as you've rightly said. And what a magnificent ball from Ederson. And then kind of Erling did the rest. So let's talk about both the pass and the fact that a defender kind of bounced off him. Any slight view, taking your sky blue spectacles off for a moment, that it might have been a foul? That if that was maybe Anfield, might it have gone the other way? Thoughts on that, or was that just an excellent attacker with his eye on the ball, only intention was to get the ball, and frankly the defender cut across him and just simply bounced off him because we were going for the ball? Where do we sit on that? Any indication it might have been a foul? Could you construct an argument around that, or not really?
No, I think very easily, to be honest. I think Erling did lead with his hand, quite frankly. I'd have given it as a goal. I think the referee saw it, and I think... We won't mention the VAR word, just did, but it should only be there to interfere with clear and obvious errors. I don't think it was, but if they'd given a foul for it, I think I'd have probably said, yeah, I can see why. So I think this is the point you've made. Yeah, no, I think it's a point, Nigel, you've often made, isn't it? VAR, is if it's just going to argue subjective decisions, it doesn't really add anything. So look, blue spectacles on, I thought he did magnificently. VAR went in our favour, we'll take it. But yeah, it could have been a foul.
Spencer, you got a different
view, maybe?
Yeah, it's
a good point. For me, it was a 70-30, 80-20 in our favour. I mean, he was a big lad, you know, power run and sort of move through it. I think that would have been really harsh to pull that one back. I just think he just out-muscled the oppo and put it away. I thought it was a solid goal myself.
I have to say, with my referee's hat on, I'm really pleased he did give it as a goal, because, and that is without my blue specs on as well, because I think he did genuinely have his eye on the ball. He was going for the ball, and the defender kind of cut across him as well. I think if they're in different positions, yeah, it might well have been a different decision.
Did he indicate first, though, Nigel?
I'm sorry?
Did he indicate before he cut across him? I mean, you know, I think we should, you know, if this was rule of the road, he sure, you know.
Is it mirror maneuver? Mirror signal, yeah,
it's
maneuver?
Something
isn't
like
it?
That, isn't, yeah, it? He did throw himself to the floor as well. And I think,
he certainly did,
frankly, when somebody does
him,
that, yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, and sorry, Nigel.
No, go on. Yeah, go on.
No, I was only going to say that there were actually two Brighton defenders back there. And the, I mean, we love watching these when it's a goal. It's a good thing to watch 10 times, isn't it? But, you know, Edison, the ball arced around, and the way he peeled off, you know, past the first defender and then, manoeuvred or out-muscled the second one, was again, Haaland making something really difficult look easy is not the description, but look routine. And I thought it was absolutely magnificent goal.
You've ruined it for me, both of you now, because Roger, who sits the other side of me, gave me clear instructions not to mention, try and get through a show without mentioning VAR. So we failed miserably on that one as well. So there we are. We've done it now.
Every goal they review, though, don't they? How can you avoid it? It's ridiculous. So then we've not even mentioned the penalty yet, Nigel.
Well, that's where we're going next, of course, which is why I kind of preface it with that. So penalties, plural. Because I think Haaland had a good case, and then some have argued that Bernardo led with his leg and kind of played for the foul, and I suppose you can't really argue with either of those, can you really? And this is where it just becomes so ridiculous. And not only that, but being in the stadium and knowing that there was a good shout for a pen, I literally watched the referee for 2 minutes, and I watched him and watched him and watched him. You could just tell he was listening in his ear, and literally 2 minutes later, I saw him put the whistle to his mouth. Well, that's it, it's going to be a penalty. And it's just, I mean, I'm lost for words, really. So help me out, either of you. Spencer, help me out here. What's going on? Come on.
Well, look, it's this conversation that comes up again and again, isn't it? I mean, actually looking at the merits or otherwise, is it a penalty? I actually think it was a very soft penalty, to be honest, because I think that Bernardo was obviously trying to trick his way through. I actually think he pushed the ball ahead and had quote lost control of the ball and actually pushed it ahead, and then somewhat cumbersomely, I don't necessarily think he was purposefully looking for the foul, but his foot was out at a bit of an awkward angle there, and he went down and so on. But I think the ball was rather far away from him at that point in a crowded penalty area, and so I think it was a soft pen myself. That's my view.
Would you agree, Tony? You're kind of nodding there. I'm not sure if you're nodding off and falling asleep, or you're actually nodding in agreement here.
Well, I think technically, I think you would say the Erling one was arguably the stronger case, because he was caught. And I think, yes, if you look at Bernardo, it's quite subtle, but he does, yes, I think it does look like he's inviting the contact. Look, I'm sadly largely with you on this, Nigel. I think VAR should only be there a very high threshold of completely the wrong decision. You look at it once in real time. If it's not bloody obvious, we move on. So I think, being a neutral, I'm not sure either of them should have been penalties, to be honest.
When have you ever been neutral?
Exactly. It'll never happen.
Listen, let's not spend too much time on this. So we got ourselves ahead. We've touched on the goal, and I thought it was a great goal from Brighton. It sounds like I'm a Brighton fan here, because I think they moved the ball quickly and a great finish. We've kind of covered the Edison issue. But then a piece of magic, which you do love a shot, don't you, from 25 yards, just in the perfect spot, just out of the reach of the keeper, that ripples the net. It's kind of, yeah, I just love the fact that, you know, you've got the team goals, yeah? You've got the one you crash in from 30 yards with a free kick that just, and then you have the beauty that is Kevin De Bruyne. Let's have a few minutes just celebrating that. Spencer, you're
well, I think they've got the sculpture material out for the fourth statue that will come in 3 or 4 years maybe. But I mean, he's so elegant. We've seen it a lot of times, haven't we? But I love the way he reacts after the game, KDB. You know, he's not arrogant, but, you know, he's nonchalant, isn't he? The way he says, yeah, it was just sat up well, it felt really good, and I look forward to doing it again. You know, it's a sort of, it's just quality. And I mean, I think, you know, he was the man of the match, really, wasn't he, against Brighton? I think he was, you know, back to his best and capped it off with a beautiful, beautiful goal.
You know, I don't think he was. I don't think he had a particularly good first half. I thought he gave the ball away. I didn't think he necessarily had a great game. Around us, we thought Laporte was magnificent, actually. Defensively was outstanding, and he was our man of the match. But listen, what do we know? What do we know, hey? Tony, well,
Kevin De Bruyne. We've got five good defenders, haven't we? You know, we've got five of them now.
Exactly.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So KVB, a few words on Kelly, and also I'd be interested to hear your thoughts also, Tony, about kind of the comments that Pep made about him after the game as well.
Yeah, interesting. Look, I share your views. I thought we were fairly workmanlike for most of the game, and as we said, credit to Brighton for a lot of that. But no, a fantastic finish. Just stroked the ball into the top corner, and who doesn't like a good stroke? Let's be honest about it. And he just made it look very easy. Lovely. It was a lovely flowing move. Great finish. And I think it was Jordan Henderson who described him as a class act on and off the field. And I think that's absolutely true. He's very modest. He's a team player. Pep's comments were quite interesting. Yeah, listen, he's been magnificent, I think, for most of the season. That wasn't perhaps his finest game. Yeah, a bit of kitology from Pep, I suspect. And we all know what a perfectionist Pep is as well. So I don't think it was meant as too harsh a criticism. And if that's him having a poor game, then I guess we can live with it, with those moments of sheer class, because we needed that to finish.
I'm obviously looking through very rose-tinted glasses, because I really genuinely thought it was especially good in the second half. That was the 601st Premier League goal, so we're told.
Under Pep Guardiola, I think.
Under Pep Guardiola, yeah. And I thought, blimey.
Only two other managers, I think, have achieved that with one club. I think it's 600 with one manager, isn't it, in one club?
Yeah,
I think Arsene Wenger and some Scottish drunk from just outside Manchester, the other one, I think.
But I mean, I don't know about their scoring rates, but because this is the seventh season, isn't it? And in the first six, I think we exceeded 100 goals on a couple of occasions, and then we've been in the 80s and 90s. But if you think about that over 38 games, I don't know what the maths is, 2.5 a game, but it's an incredible scoring statistics, season after season after season. And now we've bagged ourselves a proper striker. So, it all augurs well for the rest of this season.
And three goals again at home, wasn't it? Which is also a record for the number of times we've done that. And I'm sure Stato can enlighten us next week. But no, we're looking unbeatable at home at the moment.
So this tussle with Arsenal, can I just sort of touch about that for a second as well? Because, and I keep reminding people, everybody said, now Arsenal, they've not got a particularly strong squad, not huge depth, haven't really had any injuries. And I remember having exactly this conversation about a team from Leicester. And we had the same conversation. Don't worry, lads, City will do it. Yeah, they'll have injuries. They've not got that strong a squad. But Leicester just kept going and going and going and won the league. So I just, your thoughts on that before we kind of move on to the Champions League and then look forward to the game actually against Leicester at the weekend. But your thoughts about Arsenal's a squad. Clearly, we know they've got two excellent buys in the summer. They've got a good manager who was coached by one of the best. Your thoughts, are Arsenal a real threat? Are they our biggest threat this season? Or are you of the school of thought that, at some point, it's all going to come tumbling down?
I think they are a genuine threat. I do. And I do think this point about depth of squad and injuries is a very important one. I mean, both Leicester in that title-winning season, indeed Liverpool when they won, they had very, very few injuries. And I think if Arsenal can stay injury-free, we're now 10, 11 games into the season. We've seen, we know what Arteta's about. We know what the Arsenal team's capable of. Young, enthusiastic, got the bit between their teeth. And I do think, more than I thought 4 or 5 games ago, I think there will be a genuine threat this season, and I think we can't afford to make any slip-ups.
But do you agree? And do you see it? Who else do you see? Because Liverpool have had a couple of dodgy games, which is quite good. They obviously went and beat us, of course, but since of just before and since then have had dodgy. Who else do you see, Tony? Are Arsenal the real threat, or do you see any of the other Spurs or Chelsea? Who else?
Well, it was a fantastic weekend for us generally, wasn't it? None of the sort of traditional top six won, apart from our good selves. Arsenal, are they the real deal? I've not been consistently hugely impressed with them this season. They've had a few good games. They've ground out a few results. No team who's in the Europa League, I think, can rest on their laurels. That's a killer, that competition, isn't it? Certainly when you get through to the latter stages and you're schlepping to Eastern Europe on a Thursday night. So I think they've done very well so far. I certainly think with a better team, the better team doesn't always win the league, as arguably Leicester may have proven that time. It's difficult to see who else is really challenging. Spurs look typically Spursy and certainly have over the past week. Chelsea, I don't think, are there yet. That team from Stretford, well, enough said about them. Liverpool have been quite extraordinary this season, haven't they? Breaks my heart, suffice to say. But so I'm struggling to see who else of the traditional top six can challenge. I think it's ours for the taking, is all I can say. It's a shame in many respects the Arsenal game was called off, because that would have been a marker. On the other hand, having just come off the back of a Liverpool defeat, that might have been a tough game for us. But yeah, I think we'll all be a bit wiser once we've played. Once we've played Arsenal, we've got to play Spurs as well as a catch-up game, and then I think the league will settle down. But look, I'm very happy where we are at this stage. Let's put it that way.
And the other thing that we're all having to contend with, of course, and I don't want to get into the political questions of why it was chosen or how it was chosen or how many manila envelopes full of cash were sort of slushing around during those decisions. But we've never had this situation where in the middle of a season, we break for 4 weeks. Some teams will have a number of players, there will be injuries, others will have few players, etc. All the arguments we understand. What are your thoughts? I haven't asked this question actually in the podcast. I guess over the next few weeks we'll become more in focus, and I guess we should focus on it a bit more. What impact, what thoughts have you had, guys, on a World Cup in the middle of a Premier League season, which is bizarre in itself, as I've already indicated. But what impact might it have on the league and indeed on City and our prospects of winning another Premier League title? Any thoughts on that? Tony, where are you going on this one?
Well, as you say, we're in uncharted territory, aren't we? So it's very difficult to call. I think it's more generally just a shame we've got a World Cup in a matter of weeks, and it's almost no one's even talking about it, are they? It's just not something I can get vaguely excited about at the moment. Look, in any year, there's a lot of luck involved in winning the league, and I'm not in any way denigrating what Leicester done or what we've done over the past few seasons, but you need a bit of luck with injuries, etc. And I think that will be borne out with the World Cup. Who's going to come back with a squad of fully fit players? Who's going to come back with a load of additional injuries? The fact that Erling has a month off, I think, is clearly only helpful towards us. There's always talk of us having great strength in depth. I'm not sure how true that is, to be honest, anymore. So I think it's just another wild card, to be honest. And who can manage it the best? I think it's been very clear that Pep has been doing far more rotation than perhaps historically he has done. And I think we're in good shape at the moment. So I think that's all we can say. I would like to get excited about the World Cup. I hope we do well. England, doubt it, but we'll see. I hope it's a success. Doubt it, but we'll see. But, you know, the only one thing that matters to me is that we come back and we batter everyone and win the league again.
Spencer?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tony said most of it, hasn't he? But I mean, it's true that when you have momentum and then there's this big block of time, you know, a month in the middle, things can change and injuries will be important. I mean, we've got obviously Haaland rested, Riyad Mahrez rested, although he's not having the best of seasons, let's be honest. But most of our squad will be away. We don't know how deep into the tournament England will go. And I do think fatigue on the return, you know, and having to sort of regroup. I think we go back to it. Is it the just before Christmas or around then? Things can change. So we're in uncharted territories. But I think at the end of the day, we'll be OK. But we have to wait and see.
OK, let's talk about then the Champions League. Went away to Dortmund. And Erling Haaland started, of course, against his old club. And we came away with a point that we needed. Actually, they were happy with that as well, of course, because they then qualify as well. But we go through as group leaders of Group G. Your reflections and thoughts on the game. Who wants to go first? Who wants to go second?
Well, I'll go. Well, it was one of those nights or whatever it was. It was one of those, wasn't it, really? I mean, both teams would be not unhappy with a draw. I don't think there was any particular momentum to take risks at the back, certainly not on the part of Dortmund, who needed this point to qualify. The point takes us to the top. So in a way, you can look back and say, well, it was going to be like that, wasn't it? I mean, you know, the game had its moments. We'll come on to talk about the details and the penalty thing. I was concerned that I know there was a Haaland and Jao Cancelo went off at half time, didn't they? Which is a very, very unusual thing. That's atypical.
He had a bit of a bug, according to Pep.
A bit of a knock, and then you think, oh blimey, is this the start of something with Erling? We know that he's come in with somewhat of a reputation for knocks and things of that nature. So that was the only thing that leaves a small question mark, but. But, we played competently. We'll talk about the penalty, but 0-0 was satisfactory all round. Really, it's just one of those games.
We're a better side overall, but they had chances as well, Tony.
They certainly did. Probably should have taken the lead. Yeah, it was a bit disappointing, wasn't it? It was one of those games I was really looking forward to. On the one hand, there wasn't quite the nervousness you have. If we lose and it's the end of the world, we would still have qualified, and you thought Dortmund would also go for it. I was looking forward to a good attacking game of football. In the end, 0-0, not that exciting really, was it? But job done. Thoughts, second half certainly defensively, we tightened up, and good to see Stones back, for example. Ake did well, Akanji I thought had a good game, and Diaz looks back to his best, so quite a few positives. Cancelo looks like he might need a bit of a break, to be honest, and as you say, let's just hope Erling is fine. He went for a nice little wander around the pitch after the game, which didn't suggest there was too much wrong with him. But yeah, job done. We move on.
I had to be on the road yesterday. It wasn't planned. It was a bit of a last minute crisis. And I was actually on the road during the game. I recorded it. Couldn't get to Dortmund. Recorded and haven't even watched it yet. We're recording this the night after. And the only way I could get it was through TalkSport. And Jim Proudfoot was the commentator. And he started his commentary by saying, Manchester City in their laser blue shirts. And you know me and kits, I'm a bit of a pedant when it comes to kits and so on. So, of course, the next wee break I sort of made on the motorway, I kind of got straight onto Twitter. And I sent him a message. And I said, due to commitments today, I'm having to rely on Jim Proudfoot commentary at TalkSport, recording the match to watch it later. Did you say Man City are playing in laser blue? It is sky blue. City haven't played in laser blue since official Sean Gota played. And to be fair to him, he came back and immediately, obviously at halftime, he was obviously looking through his tweets, and he came back and said, I stand corrected, apologies. I thought, good on you. Hmm. But he gets better. 10 minutes into the second half, Jim Proudfoot goes, Manchester City, and he just paused slightly and said, in their sky blue shirts. I thought, yes. So there you go. Thanks to me, we got the right colour on TalkSport, which is important. It makes me feel better as well, Spencer,
40,000 people listening in would have just breathed a big sigh of relief there, Nigel.
Oh, thank goodness for me. Thank goodness. Yeah. That's a huge thanks to me. So there we are. Thank you, Jim. If you're listening, I know you listen every week. Thank you for listening and making that change. Let's talk about the penalty then. Here we go. It's got to be done. The papers are full of it. Every tweet, every radio airwave has had the... Why on earth is Why on earth is Riyad Mahrez still taking penalties? Of course, Erling was off the pitch. Of course, he must have been kicking himself. A guaranteed goal; he never misses. So, what's going on here? Was it a case of look, he's got to get his confidence back, but he's missed a lot, hasn't he, Spencer? And some important ones.
Well, having undertaken a great technical analysis, I can report that I have absolutely no idea. I really don't. I mean, these things, of course, you can never replicate on the training pitch the emotion and the dynamic of the moment. But it is a curiosity, isn't it? Apparently, City have had the most penalty misses of any top flight team in recent times. Was it? I can't remember what the numbers are.
25
out of 90 or something like that.
Sorry, just to be clear. So out of 90, we've missed 25. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. Is that right, Tony? Have I picked up the right numbers?
We've certainly missed 25. I know that. I'm not sure.
It was about 70-30. Yeah. We've missed sort of, you know.
It didn't happen like that when Franny Lee was taken.
It's out of 80, I believe, actually.
Oh, 80. Okay, fine. Okay. Franny Lee never missed.
So, you know, it is a low strike rate, isn't it? I can't add any particular value to the conversation other than to say that, you know, the media love to you know, report things that are noteworthy, and that, you know, there's more fun in reporting the misses than
we've got to talk about that is a big percentage, and you know, it's very easy, isn't it, to say, of course, Pep is absolutely on to everything, yes, tactically, in terms of man management, he gets everything absolutely right. So it's only fair to ask the question, why we are getting penalties quite wrong. Why are we not doing something about this? Or if whatever we're doing can't be right, can it, Tony? I hate to criticise the great Pep Guardiola in Manchester City that we all love. We know that. That comes with the territory. We know that. But is it not right that we should at least spend a few minutes asking the question, what's going on and what should we be doing about it?
No, absolutely. And it's quite extraordinary. I mean, look, my heart sunk when we went on a penalty last night. It just seemed very predictable. And you know, occasionally a keeper will pull off a great save, fair enough. But of the three of the last, he's missed three of his last four, Mahrez, and they've all been poor penalties, just sort of hit at a nice height for the keeper to save. You know, there's a bit of luck that he goes the right way, but if he goes the right way, he's going to save those every single time. And I don't understand, as you say, these are professional footballers. Surely you do what I used to do as a kid, which is practice with your left foot and your right foot in the bottom left corner, the bottom right corner, until literally you can do a blindfold. Now, Spencer said, okay, there's the big match pressure and all that, but these are professional footballers. And it's not even just the penalties, to be honest. The corners have been poor. The set pieces have been poor of late. It just seems to be a bit of a blind spot. But Gundogan has an 88% success rate with penalties. Why didn't he take it last night? It just seemed Mahrez, as you say, maybe it was a case of trying to get his confidence up. But
I suppose he won the pen, maybe, and that was the momentum.
Yeah, and look, we could talk about whether that was a penalty. I thought that was a little bit generous, shall we say, but yeah. There you go. But we've missed some real big ones, haven't we? I mean, I was just having a thought to myself before. We missed two against Liverpool. We missed one against Chelsea that would have won the league, albeit we still won it. The West Ham one that would have made life a lot simpler for all of us last year, etc., etc., etc. You know, we're the favourites for the Champions League, aren't we? And by quite a distance. It's extraordinary, really. We digress a little bit. I heard this morning on the radio, Real are 8-1 to win the Champions League. And, you know, they just win it every year, and yet we're odds on almost to win it. It will cost us one of these days, real big time. Last night, all right, was frustrating. But just, you know, we've got so many great technicians who can pass the ball pinpoint under pressure. And yet,
exactly,
you put the ball on the spot and just say, just pass it into that corner. And we just can't do it. I don't know what the answer is, apart from
listening to you, then, Tony, you presumably, Haaland is obviously the first choice if he's on the pitch, but if he's not, you'd sort of Gundogan get him on that training ground doing what you said when you were a 4-year-old in North Manchester growing up as a
South
lad.
Manchester, please, Nigel. Let's be careful.
I wind you up
here.
Every time. I love
with you, Tony,
every time.
On the south. With you, Tony.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, Gundo doesn't start every game, doesn't he? So that makes it a little bit more difficult. But yes, surely somebody literally blindfold them, say, you put it through that tyre 10 times, and when you've done that, you can go home after training.
Go for your tea.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Gundogan is he's got that mentality, hasn't he? He's a strong character. And you sort of back him from a being able to cope with the pressure standpoint every time to see it home. But as you say, he's not always in the team. So
yeah, I think the point we should also make is, you know, we would have forgiven Mahrez if he'd had a brilliant game last night, but I thought it sort of capped his evening, didn't it?
Yeah, wasn't it? He had one of his poor ones, let's be fair. Well, certainly they were talking, because they had Stuart Pearce actually as the summariser, and he was saying he just kept coming inside on his left foot and just going into traffic every time. He was kind of a bit one-dimensional and didn't have a great game, according to the commentary.
Fair comment.
Talking of sky blue shirts for a moment, actually, and not laser blue shirts, bit of news I picked up on today, which I'm sure you saw as well, was that Sergio Aguero's shirt that he scored in the 93rd minute plus 20 seconds against Queen's Park Rangers to win the Premier League for Manchester City for the first time in 44 years or whatever it was.
I remember that.
Yeah, I was there as well. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I was there. And it's come up for sale. And, yeah, 20 grand. I mean, come on, it's got to go for more than that, hasn't it? We won't go into the story of kind of the kit man and it being left behind, and Mario Balotelli can read up on it yourselves. But, of course, what an exciting, someone who's got a bit of spare cash.
I think it'll be someone in South Manchester, don't you think?
It won't be a North Manchester person, will it, Tony? It'll be a South Manchester person.
Well, I think we should have a whip round.
So we could go round. So, yeah, Lisa, Rob, get everybody to Steve Cox. Yeah,
What do we think it will go for?
I reckon it could go for $100,000.
Well, really? I thought 20 was very cheap. Look, as a marker, I acquired a signed shirt signed by Yaya Toure, Manuel Pellegrini, and there's one other signature on it which I can't recognise, and that cost me £230, which was all went to charity. I'm very, very glad to give, but you know, if that's worth £230, I suspect this is worth a fair bit more. I mean, it's a great story as well for anyone who hasn't left behind.
Imagine if that third signature was kind of Messi or Maradona. Your £230 could have been well spent, couldn't it? It may well be someone who never played a first team game for City and just happened to be walking past and thought everybody was signing it.
It might be you, Nigel, for all I know.
That's very unlikely, I think. That's very unlikely.
I'm going to have to find out now.
There is a way of finding out, isn't there, of course, because there's someone at the club will know who that signature
is. Yes.
All right. What about your memorabilia then? You are someone who's bought stuff in the past then, Spencer?
No, my memorabilia comprises the remnants of the flags that from the various cup finals that I have adorned it behind me. I haven't shelled out proper money for any City memorabilia, actually. My cousin Mark Ballin has, and actually he actually also commissioned the Dennis Stewart overhead, somebody to do that and present it to Dennis Stewart, you'll be pleased to know. So there's all sorts of things going on in the background, but he's got quite a bit of stuff.
Well, can I tell you, when we beat Charlton 5-1 to go, when was that? Was that 89?
Probably.
Something like that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was on the pitch and I kept a bit of the pitch and grew it in my bedroom for many a year. So that's about the only other piece of City I have.
We've all got a bit of main road grass on our gardens. Come on.
And I think I've said on the show before that my dad, of course, bought his seat from the Kippax and bolted it to a tree in his garden. So he's got his main road seat. So we've all got a bit of memorabilia, haven't we? Fantastic. Listen, if you're interested, have a look at that Aguero shirt. We know that there is one member of the City podcast team who has on our WhatsApp group who regularly comments, has put a bid in. And I guess he's serious, knowing he's a man of means. We won't mention his name on air. He is a man of some means, and we wish him luck with his purchase. Maybe he'll bring it on the show one week and we can all share his experience. Listen, one more thing to talk about before we go, and that's the small matter of former Premier League champions Leicester City, who have fallen on harder times, it's fair to say, who are languishing at the bottom of the Premier League against the champions Manchester City. You'd like to think, Tony, we're going to go there and, despite the exhausted trip to Germany, you'd like to think that that's it's an early kickoff on Saturday, and you'd like to think we should do the business there, shouldn't we?
You do. There's nothing better than bagging 3 points in the 12:30 kickoff on a Saturday, is there? And job done, and see how everyone else does. They've turned the corner a little, haven't they? They won 4-0 last week, albeit an extraordinary game where I think the Wolves had 28 shots and still managed to lose 4-0. But yeah, I think that's exactly the sort of game we should win and win comfortably if we are the real deal. And I think we are. Hopefully Erling, as we said, is fine. Tuesday to Saturday gives us a reasonable break. So, yeah, I'm as confident as you can ever be with the game. I'm always a bit of a Lisa Rabinovitz and a bit of a worrier at heart, as I'm sure most of us are, but I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, listen, Spencer, before we go, your thoughts ahead of the Leicester game at Saturday, early
kick-off. You know, you say Leicester, they've just come off the bottom, haven't they? Actually, when they play, they can play. So I wouldn't think it's a slam dunk. Of course, I think we should win the game. But I think it'll be a little bit tougher than we may imagine. But I think we'll win the game.
Listen, it's been a huge pleasure. Thank you to my two guests, to Tony Newgrosh and to Spencer Debson. This is Nigel Rothband saying thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you all very soon.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.